Welcome to the Group Podcast by Cineasters Guild with HR4K and Contact Coffee.
Okay, we are here. It is Friday morning, and we are blessed this morning. We are blessed because we have Nick here. That is why, for the video viewers, you can't see anything. Nick still screwed the nut for himself and his future by not showing his face. How are you, Nick?
I'm very good, Gaz. You're very kind saying you're blessed, and it's very convenient considering what day it is.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That's true. Oh.
Wow, it's all going on today, mate.
Relevant.
Very relevant.
Hashtag relevant.
It's Good Friday. It is Good Friday.
Well, I'm having a good Friday so far.
Good.
So Ben and Luke are busy today. That's why we've got Nick's jumped in, which is good. If it's been a while since you've been on, it's sort of crap, isn't it? Because when you're working, you're kind of disconnected from Contact Coffee in general, and Luke's doing most of, you know, the day-to-day stuff, and you're also disconnected from this.
Yeah, it's I'm sort of like a parent that's sat on the side of the pitch watching the kids play football. I just watch the world pass me by, so I see you guys shooting the shit, and I have points I'd like to add to the conversation, but obviously I'm not involved. And then same with Contact Coffee. It just goes on, growing arms and legs without that was my input, which is, it's frustrating, but at the same time, it's still happening, it's still moving forward with Luke's input. So, I suppose it's nature of the beast, isn't it, mate?
Yeah, totally. I mean, I would imagine that must be, make it frustrating at times. Except, I mean, you're lucky in that Luke is doing a good job, but I don't know. These are like the formative, this wasn't actually what we're going to talk about, but these are like the formative years still of the brand, aren't they? It's those foundation years, and you're kind of watching it. I mean, it's not like you don't have any input, is it? But it's day-to-day, it's not,
The way we do it at the moment is our ideas are still both of ours. It's the processes, I suppose, that have been put in place. So, for example, Luke's been dealing with inductions this week, and he's done the introductions to the new employees, and I've just not really had much input, so I've not managed to meet them. And it's all the process people are going to get used to. People in the business are going to see how it all runs without me being there. So when I rock up and start going, right, I don't want this happening this way, who the fuck is this guy? I know Luke and I, I think one of our strengths is we've got similar tones and similar ways of going about stuff. So I'm not worried about how it's going to get done. It's just, I suppose, a bit of guilt, really.
I feel for Luke in a way. And this is not anything to do with this. I feel for him in that he's having to do things that I haven't had to do yet. So employee-wise, that process of going from not employing anyone or employing friends and family like I do to employing outside people from outside the circle of trust, normal people from the streets, going through all the administration side of it, the legality side of those things. Like, he is kind of doing that. I mean, I know Ben does that stuff, but I don't think Ben actually does it. Yeah, I know he employs people, but I'm not sure how much input Ben has himself into that. Like, I feel like when I actually employ somebody outside of the family, I feel like I'm probably going to have to go and have a brew with Luke, because he's going to be a SOB on it all. And he's kind of had to do that first out of all of us.
So I think, actually, we've seen the benefits from this. So we've brought on Dan, who is our head barista, and he's come in with experience from the coffee world. And he's done inductions in the past. He's been part of induction. He's also hosted inductions. He essentially knows how a business should run, and he's just gripped it. And we're learning a lot from him. So if you look to bring in, say, exclusively mates or people from, you know, the armed forces who've got no experience, but you know they're going to, you know, graft and put a certain element of work effort in, and then it's great. But I mean, experience it from the actual the business and the trade. We're just seeing a massive benefits from it, mate. It's been really good, actually.
Yeah, I think it's because you could have a balance, haven't you? Because I don't believe in it only hiring veterans and all that sort of thing. You know, yeah, I agree with hiring the best person for the job. But I think you've got to have a balance of, like, we've always kind of prided ourselves as companies, as we kind of take pride in the fact that we don't know what we're doing, and we just try to do things the way that we think they should be done. And that works to an extent. But there's also things ticking the box wise that you do actually have to do. And it's not, you've got to balance it with going in with this cookie cutter, this is what businesses are supposed to do format. Do we need to do that with the kind of way that we look at it? Well, is this stuff extraneous? Are we doing that because it's always been done that way? Or can we do it a better way? It's that balance between what you have to have to not, you know, mess your business up, and keeping that sort of free flow.
Yeah, I see exactly what you're saying. So I think when we first started business, we thought if you're going to start a business, you must have an A level in business, and you've got to done marketing, some sort of marketing degree, or and that's like the traditional route to business, and that's what we thought. And we were just at the same time like fuck it, let's see what we can do off our own back, and we sort of learned the business world, and it's just not the case. There's just so many bloggers out there and people who haven't done these different educational routes to, so yeah, I think it's the way we've gone about it is sort of learning on the go has been good, but we do need to be bringing experience in every now and then.
Yeah, 100%. Okay. I kind of decided what we were going to talk about. Well, I threw it open to the group, what we're going to talk about was sustainability. And you instantly came back at me and said, have you seen a certain documentary recently? And I said, no.
Yeah.
So have you actually watched it? So if you don't know what we're talking about, it's this Seaspiracy, which is the sequel, I suppose, to Cowspiracy. Have you seen it?
I have seen it, mate, yeah.
Okay.
Have you watched it yet, guys?
No, I can't. Yeah, I probably should, shouldn't I? But yeah, I haven't seen it. I haven't seen Cowspiracy either. But I feel like I have from talking to, you know, Hannah, my mate and ex-customer service chick. I feel like I have, but I haven't.
So one of the key things that gets brought up in it is like sustainable fishing. So how to go about sustainable fishing, and is sustainable fishing actually a real thing? Can it be achieved? And he argues no. So I thought that's where the sustainability topic came from for this week. But I think it's a good documentary. I don't know enough to have any points to argue against it. But some of the stuff that he presented could be questioned quite easily. But at the same time, pictures don't lie. Like what you see there in front of you on the screen is, you know, it shouldn't be happening. So it certainly throws up some interesting ideas and questions.
Okay.
But there's a Cowspiracy one as well, isn't there?
Yeah, this is just it. It's like you have this, there seems to be this, I don't really watch any documentaries on Netflix because I know from seeing other ones in the past, I've sort of used to do it and I stopped. I feel like sometimes I know as soon as I put it on where this is going. I know what the end point is. I know that it's going to be fairly one-sided. There's always the agenda there. Like if I'm going to watch a documentary, I'd rather watch a documentary that talks about both sides, talks about facts, and that, yeah, I'm left to make up my mind, not be told what I should be thinking, and people trying to persuade you of it. I just don't find that as fun. And I think, unfortunately, what we've got nowadays is when something is nicely packaged on Netflix and it all looks great, and it's like some of these things are kind of like, you know, when you just read the headline of a clickbait thing and you make up your mind. I feel like you're sitting there and giving an hour and a half to this clickbait thing that just wants you to look at it, and he's going to try and persuade you one way, and he's going to, it isn't going to give both sides. Because who's got time to sit and actually research this stuff? But if you do, a lot of these things, there are arguments against. There are, you know, there's arguments for these things that they don't necessarily disagree, but they'll just lay it out in a more balanced manner. You know, because I think this is kind of where I was coming from in the state sustainability thing. So I'm sure everybody would agree that it'd be nice if the world stayed as close to how it was when it fucking turned up as possible, if that's a really stupid way of saying it. But yeah, we are, you know, there's definitely changes happen to the environment, and some of those are caused or at least made worse by us. And it'd be better if those things could be minimized. That's kind of where I am in it. I think you have to be honest about it. And this is, I'm going to sort of link it to business, but the thing that actually made me bring this up as a subject was seeing the remnants of the gatherings we had the other day when the sun came out, when everyone went out, and there's just, you know, rubbish and shit everywhere because people went, yeah, fuck this, this is mega, I'm getting hammered, I've been in my house for a year, I'm coming out, and I've got no issue with that whatsoever. You know, it's not the ideal scenario, but I certainly, for young people, I have no issue really, if I'm honest whatsoever, with them feeling like we need to get out. We've had a year of our life taken off us. I know first world problems has been worse things in the past, but the year of our life taken off us, want to get out and see the mates, I want to have a party. I sympathize with that. But I kind of feel like a lot of these people would be the ones telling me off for eating meat and not caring quite so much about the environment. And we see it with, like, do you remember the Extinction Rebellion protests and all that stuff? Exactly the same thing. Just shit left behind. I feel there's an element of hypocrisy. So I think if you're going down this road, you have to be honest about it and have that integrity.
Yeah, I completely agree. So it's, I've seen the images as well. And first of all, it's frustrating. It's incredibly frustrating to see. It's, you know, the parks are just absolutely covered with shite, and it sort of downplays the fact that, you know, I'm spending a couple of minutes of my day cleaning jam jars in the sink to then put into the recycling bin. And you got, you know, and the amount of people doing across the country doing that across the country, they're doing their bit, and then people are just quite happy just strewing all their gash across these parks. It's incredibly frustrating, and I'm sure you agree. Some of the shitholes that we've been to, you see similar stuff, similar gash piles on the streets. So, a place I've been to in particular, you'd be driving down the road, and there's be like just mounds on the side of the street of just like carrier bags, gash bottles. You see people just, you'd be talking to someone, like a local national, and they just throw like a bottle on the floor in front of you and, or a bit of gash. And if someone did that in the UK, I don't know whether you noticed this, but someone did it in the UK, come on, mate, but you're going to pick it up or you pick it up for him. Yeah. And that's a culture we're going into. And I had this argument, discussion with someone that, a social distance party during the last easing of the lockdown, and I said, you know, why are we putting all this effort in for cleaning the jam jars, you know, recycling, but everything we have to do, separating and taking the time to do it, not that it takes much time anyway, if when we go to these countries that are densely populated, we're talking hundreds of millions, these third world countries, and they're literally just throwing gash in the street, there's no, they've just got no respect for the country. They're just chopping down plantations, and what was the point? And you know, it just makes a point, we're wasting our time. And his comeback was, and I didn't agree with it at the time, but then I thought about it, and I kind of do now, is education. They've just not had access to the same education or been not education in that math, science, English, but more they've not been educated that that's a wrong thing to do. It's not been a push from their government, from their families. And then if you switch back to what we've seen in the UK fairly recently, where people are just ditching gash in the parks, is that not being informed, they're not being educated? Is there not enough information out there, or is it not pushed on by the parents? I don't know.
I mean, with these countries we're talking about, I've seen exactly the same thing. And we're talking about education. I think it probably is an education thing, but I think it's probably also, some of these countries have got bigger problems than where they're throwing their cash. On a personal level, I'm not saying that there's bins in these countries. There are bins, there are places you can put cash better than just throwing it on the floor. But if you are financially in a very bad way and you are, in a slightly more threatened environment than we are here, I'll give you a little bit of a pass that you're not completely down on saving the planet. I'm not giving them that much of a pass, but there is a pass there. There's a reason. But what that does do is make it look worse here, because here you couldn't be any safer. Yeah, this is the best.
Yeah.
But people don't like to admit it, but this is the best standard of living that has existed. You don't have real problems. Some people do, but the majority of people getting up in the morning and worried about where the food's going to come from, the majority, whether they're going to be safe, whether they're going to be able to get on with the kind of life that they kind of want to try and build, that's kind of there for them. So I think they probably do have the bandwidth to walk to a bin, or just not be a drunken dick. And we've all been a drunken dick. But I think that the young people at the weekend, and I'm saying young people, you assume they're young because that's all I saw. It was like fucking Magaluf, and I live in the middle of nowhere. It was literally just, it was Magaluf. But it's more the Extinction Rebellion side of thing annoyed me more, because they are the people who are supposed to be existing for this.
Yeah.
And this hypocrisy. I mean, you never get away with hypocrisy. You can't, it's impossible to live your life without being slightly a hypocrite slightly. But if that's your end goal is to save the planet and draw attention to the climate emergency as you brand it, then you need to be an example of that in everything you do.
I agree. It's hard to say that during the direct relation between the Extinction Rebellion types and these party goers at the weekend or the last couple of days, because we simply don't know. But there's an element of assumption there. But the Extinction Rebellion. So if you look at it, which countries in the world are producing the most money? The most fossil fuels and producing the most gas and ditching the most in the sea. I'd argue it's probably not the UK, and I'd argue we're doing a lot. We're not great, but we're doing it. We are doing bits, to try and help the environment, help the world, and as you said, bring it back to how we found it.
Yeah.
But I think it'd be better suited if these extinct rebellion types, they went to your Chinas of the world, your Indias, and did your exact same demonstrations there, and it won't happen because for start of it, it's easier to do it in UK.
Yeah,
UK is one of the global players. Sits on a lot of the committees, chairs. I understand it from that perspective, but. And we can influence change, but we're not the single most one of the top polluters, arguably. I don't know. I've not seen the details, but you say China, India, these densely populated countries, your Nigerias, other African countries that who possibly producing more of a carbon footprint. Maybe you're going to have your demonstrations there, but I know it won't happen because Some countries will get shot. Some countries you won't even get into the country because they'll be tracking your data before you even get there. So it's just a bit of a cop out that you decide to do it in UK. And
I agree. Obviously, we see that. We see that with all sorts of issues, don't we? I mean, we're not going to, we won't divert too much here, but we see it the same with, you know, we're looking at equality of all types. You know, it's pretty good here. It's pretty good. We, you know, we're aware of those issues and we are continually slowly moving forward to making everything better. You know, we've kind of been on it before with the whole pride flags above military bases and stuff. It's like, well, yeah, well, we're fine with it, dude. If we're all fine with it here, it's fine. Go to Saudi, see what happens if you try and do that. That's probably they're the people you need to be having a go at. But I've obviously singled them out there, but yeah, it's exactly the same issue, dude. It's like, it's easy to be an activist and apply your trade of the thing that you're interested in doing. And that's absolutely, absolutely fine. We've all believe, and we have to have a reason for living. If that's what yours is, surely you would want to be most effective. And actually, it's very easy to turn up in London, shut a road down, and have a party while gobbing off of people than it is to, exactly like you say, fly to another country and really try and affect change and risk the fact that you will get thrown in prison or you will have problems just generally. You might get arrested. You might get filled in. This might just be me. I don't know. Maybe we're just old. But I feel like that's what campaigners did a little bit more in the past. If you were going to be an activist and a campaigner, you had personal risk attached to you doing it. And these people do still exist. I just think there's an element of... there's an element of fashion and trendiness. And there's also probably an element of virtue signaling, all these things combine to a bit of a perfect storm of a very noisy thing happening that isn't really very effective at what it's meant to be. It just doesn't achieve anything. It just becomes an annoyance. And I was towards a hand yesterday. It's quite funny. A guy came up on my Facebook who I haven't seen since I was about 20. And it turns out he is now part of Extinction Rebellion, which is hilarious. It's kind of not a surprise. He's a nice bloke. It's kind of not a surprise he's ended up doing that. I've talked to Han, and she was like, oh, yeah, so-and-so's part of that. Oh, mega. I was like, well, look, if this is genuine, if you really, really, really do want to push people in this direction and make them understand and make them convert in a way to what you think and educate them, you know, if that's what you really, really want, then everything about Extinction Rebellion and the way they go about things is counterproductive to that. Reasonable people don't look at that and go, oh, actually, yeah, that's right. They go, I'm trying to get to fucking work and clean that shit up and stop fucking vandalizing stuff, being a cunt.
Yeah.
The exact opposite effect. And actually, it undermines it. And that's what makes you believe at the end that actually they're a bunch of and we've spoken about them entirely derogatory. Maybe they do some good, but that's not the perception that me and you, the average person on the street who, you know, perhaps needs to be educated on this stuff. I don't look at it. I go, you're a cunt. I'm not interested in what you've got to say.
So I think that's quite interesting because the Extinction Rebellion will attract and a certain crowd, and people will get on board and people will make changes to their lives and where they do stuff because Extinction Rebellion saying this and that, and you know they'll make us a stronger effort to make sure you know they recycle correctly. Do you think if maybe someone who's not as left-leaning, which I think we both agree the Extinction Rebellion is, and maybe someone from like a company organization from the right saying, guys, you know, the world is in a shit state. I know a couple of companies done it. Let's plant a tree for every 10 day sacks or have been sold or, you know, or, you know, let's trying to make as a company going to be more sustainable? Do you think the message coming from those sort of companies, organizations, people who are maybe not turds, do you think that will have a better and truer voice, or do you think people still turn a blind eye like these Muppets on the last couple of days?
That's a good little pivot there, because it's the business side of it that I'm mainly trying to talk about. We've gone that bit of a rabbit hole there, but yeah, we with the Extinction Rebellion, we've seen the renter crowd, the renter turd element that's turned up at every protest, who just want to smash everything up. And yeah, they do tend to be left-leaning. And we don't try and talk about politics on this, but they do tend to be more left-leaning. A lot of people, I'm sure, would say that big business certainly tends to be at least central and potentially right-leaning, because they probably understand capitalism, and they probably are a fan more of the free market, which are kind of traditional right-leaning things, I suppose. I don't really believe in that stuff, but I think that's how people would see it. I think with business, you can't just do things like you've said anymore. So if you buy however many of these, we're going to plant a tree. I think all those things, I might be talking shit, but this is what I suspect to be true. All those things don't actually make that much of a difference. And it's actually just trying to get a customer base within that cause and hoping that they'll kind of leave you alone, because when the sights of anger get turned on you, then you can say, well, no, we plant these trees. And I think there's a disingenuous aspect to that. And I think what will probably drive these things with business in general is it tends to be tax and regulation. So the government, well, the world in general has decided that we have this green agenda. And it's the same in the UK, getting certain marks by a certain time. And to encourage business to do that, there'll be tax, there'll be regulations, and it'll be whatever, because that's how you steer business.
Yeah.
So I think it would become normalized in that way, in that when you do go to the shop, it will be part of the course that actually your stuff isn't made of plastic. It'll be part of the course that the stuff came locally. It just becomes normalized, and that's how it happens. I don't think it really happens by people being shouted at.
I agree. I'm just in. Want to try and capture that point there. So, I might have muddled up your words, but essentially saying that, you know, for every backpack sold, every day sack sold, I'm planting a tree, is more of a marketing ploy. Is that what you believe?
I would say so. Yeah, it's a marketing ploy. It's exactly the same with any other cause. Same with changing your profile picture to a rainbow. All of those things. They tend to be marketing ploys and an element of survival to keep going in an environment where things are moving towards this green future.
So I can understand that aspect, and I do agree to
that's
an extent.
That's not everybody, by the way. That's not everyone. It's just
Well, so if you're saying every backpack sold, I will plant a tree, and that aside, okay, that individual might be a marketing ploy to try and bring more money. I'm actually going to get that day set, that particular day set, because the men are going to plant a tree, but by doing that, you're setting a tone from maybe like a capitalist, business. And you are saying, I support, the well-being of our planet. Mm-hmm. So do you think the larger message is quite important when someone's doing that, despite it might be the individual part of it being a sort of marketing ploy for, the day sack and plant the tree?
I think it comes down to just being honest. Now, if you look at Patagonia have been doing this since the start, and they do it very well. They're probably the biggest company you've got. I mean, in the all sort of sphere that we're aware of, they're probably the biggest company you've got who have been doing this. Like, they're absolute market leaders in it. Don't buy our stuff, we'll send it back, we'll repair it as much as we can to recycle. They just do everything, and it's their core thing. Now, that's different to doing it when you're just another business trying to survive. So I think if you're doing that, they can use that in their branding. They go, look, this is what we're about. It's our core belief. There's a difference between that and another business. And they do, they lead the way. There's another business who is just trying to exist. And it's harder when you're smaller. So it's another business trying to exist. And they know that this green thing is coming. It's coming. They've got to try and adapt to it. I think you're better off in that situation being honest and saying, look, we can see what's happening here. We've got to try and move in this direction, but we can't pretend that we're religious about this. You know, we're not religious about the environment. It's not the whole thing we're about. It's not that. We're trying to do these little things. So yeah, maybe we'll make an effort to make our packaging, you know, biodegradable or whatever. And then once we've got that squared, we'll try and sort this out. It's that slow process, but you should never try and make out that you're, I think they'd be more successful if they didn't make out that they were some sort of pariah and they're awesome at it. And that they really, 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 really care, which is what they all try and do. Because it's like, if a big business that doesn't have this as their core concept turned around and told me, oh, we really care about this, I'll literally go, okay, do you? Well, where's this come from? Where's that come from? How do you get this? Yeah. How do you do that? And we know it's all bullshit. You know, like Apple's a perfect example. Apple will probably be seen as quite a right-on company. But we know the things that their phones are made out of and how their phones are made, it's all shite. It's all bad. So there's a difference between being honest and not. And I think that's gone.
Yeah, I understand that. If I spin you a yarn from Contact Coffee's perspective, so we started the business side. We didn't care initially what our packaging was. We wanted coffee in our packaging, and get it on the shelves, get it out the door. And it wasn't a concern with this the climate control. Admittedly, it wasn't a priority for the company. It's in the back of our heads, as with everything, but I think as it's been brought to the forefront of everyone's heads in recent times, particularly ours as well, like it's shit seeing, the world. Going down to the beach and just seeing a lot of gash kicking around. And we've started to think, okay, like we might ask to get a different type of packaging. We might get, something that's a bit more sustainable, as you say, or something that's, fully recyclable. And that's where we start to switch fire, not because we want to use it as a marketing point, not because we want to say, we're Patagonia, this is our party line, this is what we're about. Partly it's from, I think, maybe how our heads have been turned in recent times from these documentaries like Seaspiracy and all these, all these different documentaries that are out there. I think that's the way we've naturally migrated. Do you see that as people sort of virtue signaling, or do you think that's just going to happen anyway?
Yeah, I think that's good business. I think it's quite a nuanced point, I think. We're exactly the same. So I think it's harder for small businesses, because the reality is when you're starting, every penny counts. And actually, the difference between being able to get a product, make it, get it posted to someone in something, and all those things, that is more important. And you have to be honest about this. That is way more important than any other aspect. Can you stay in business? Yes, okay. Right, I've now got a grounding in business. We're kind of okay. Then you start going, okay. Because that's how I see it. I horizon scanning, I look and I go, okay, in 10 years' time, 20 years' time, this kind of stuff is going to be expected from businesses. And the way as the customer demographic changes, what they expect from a company will be here at this line. We're not there. How can I slowly move towards there? We're doing exactly the same thing, trying to look at packaging, trying to look at where your stuff's made, the whole thing. But it's about... I'm being honest about it in that, would I like the world to be a greener, nicer place? Yes. But I'm only doing it because I know that that's how my business is going to survive in the future. That's There's no virtue signaling there. If I told you I woke up in the morning and cared, the first thing on my mind is, how's the planet today? It's bullshit. I couldn't give a shit at that level. I want to, it'd be nice if the world was a nicer place and I'd like to stay in business. What can I do? Because I'm going to be forced to move in that direction business-wise at some point by regulation and tax. How do I do that now? So you're not buying a Cineating Skill product because we are a green company. You're buying it because you believe in the brand and the ethos. But can I enable you to also not feel quite so shitty about where your stuff comes from? Yeah, maybe. But I'll have to move that incrementally and very slowly. So no, I agree with you entirely. You just have to be honest about it.
That's it. I think when it came about for Contact Coffee, what the, you know, maybe switching directions, when we launched our Nespresso pods. Mm-hmm. So the people that put our coffee into the pods, one of the first questions we asked was, you know, can we have recyclable Nespresso pods?
Yeah.
And we were pretty hard up on it as well. And because we've seen other companies do it, and their comeback was quite interesting, actually. So they sent a big blurb of like why they don't think using recycled Nespresso pods is a good for the environment.
Yeah.
So essentially, if you're using a recycled pod, I'll spin the dirt. So if you're using a recycled pod, the amount of energy is needed to create that single pod outweighs the amount of energy that is required to use recycled aluminium.
Yeah.
It far surpasses it. So and they gave all the numbers when it come down to it. And it's, you know, when people talk about having these recycled bits on your items, that, you know, their products are recycled, there's other factors that come into play, like how much energy, like, yeah, can I throw that Nespresso pod on the ground and it'll eventually turn into soil? Mm-hmm. But to actually make it takes up, it's more damaging to the environment than an aluminium pod. So, yeah, it's just it's some stuff you don't think about on face value, really.
Totally. And I just come up with a nice little term there that I broke down. I was kind of proud of myself. It's effect over optics. So
nice.
It looks, good that, isn't it? I'm fucking made up with that. Yeah, so effect over optics. So yeah, virtue signaling wise and being able to look good as a business, it's nice for you to be able to say, well, all this stuff's recycled. And okay, that's you. You've been the good people police will tick your box and you'll be left alone. But the reality is, the actual net effect on the environment or what you're trying to make better is worse by doing that. So you have, what's it actually about? Is it about looking like a good person or is it about saving the planet? Yeah, I mean, you can apply that to everything. But I think that will lead me on to something else. So I don't know enough. So it's your education point. I don't know enough about it, mainly because I'm one man trying to run a business and I don't have the bandwidth for it. So, and I think everybody is probably in a very similar position unless they do really care about this stuff, because it will have all sorts of situations like you've just described where what you think on the face of it is the best thing to do isn't actually the best thing to do. If you want to, you know, if you're thinking about solving the problem and not just looking like you are. So do you need people? Do you need somebody to come in and like assess your business? Like I use Han for that. So Hannah is like, I've known her since she was like 16. I was 18. We were together for about 10 years, boyfriend and girlfriend for about 10 years. Then we split up and whatever. And obviously she's still pretty much my best mate in the world. Other than my wife, she's my best friend. And
good save. Good save.
There's no issue there. We're cool.
Yeah.
So, but she her dad's a proper hippie. Her dad's an archaeologist. She was brought up vegetarian. Not like religiously, but her dad's a vegetarian. She's always been in that green thing. It's always been part of her life. And, you know, she's vegan now. She's, her thing is knowing about all of these things. That's all she does. She works at hairdressers, but it's like an environmental one. So I have her. I get a person who has genuine knowledge and isn't a militant idiot, you know, who she's not it's not a religion to her. She wants to do the right thing. She doesn't care about virtue signaling. I'm able to go to her and say, okay, well, what's going on here? What am I actually best doing with my packaging? What's going to make the best effect? What is the thing in this, around this issue that I, what's the best thing for me to do? And I think that's probably, we're probably all to an extent going to have to find somebody like that to help you. Because we don't have the bandwidth. If you get someone as like a consultant and you bring them in and go, right, well, look at what everything we're doing. How can we change? And give me a roadmap. Let's look at the finances. Give me a slow roadmap of where we could be in 5 to 10 years' time if we start changing this stuff. Because there's small businesses. It's still a every penny counts type of thing. And doing currently, it's fucking expensive to try and do these things because people know there's a premium on it. And people know that it's going to have to happen.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're right. There's so many different facets of a business that you need to be focusing on, and having an environmental aspect is something that, you know, it's not even been considered previously. So, yeah, I mean, but having someone there, like, I mean, would that be spotted by the government? Would it be its own, like, I don't know, where would that come from? Would it be a governmental one?
I think the government would probably do it on a large scale. Yeah, and obviously they, as with anything, they'd enforce it slowly with taxation and regulation. I think it probably would. I mean, that's, we see that stuff with everything. Look at what happened. Cars is a good example. You know, so you get money back or tax breaks or whatever if you're producing and buying electronic cars. Whether you believe electronic cars are better for the environment or not, that's the line that's been taken. So yeah, that's how the government is going to try and encourage people to do that. Yeah, I think that stuff will happen. And this is why I think, frustrating as it is, as a small business to go, right, I feel like I'm on my feet here. I feel like I'm doing well. And then having these parameters applied to you of ways that you're going to be expected to practice, not only by, you know, government and various bodies, but by your customer who've been brought up more aware of these things, of these issues. I think you're just better trying to get ahead of the game and slowly starting to change now, because at some point you're going to have this a mega business plan where you're ordering everything from China, your Turkey, or you know, wherever. And it's people are going to stop buying. People are going to go, well, I'm not doing that. I mean, there'll always be an element of people who just want the cheapest thing. But yeah, it's going to become harder and harder and harder to operate in that, using that old model. So I think we're better starting now to change.
Yeah, embracing a change. I think, I completely agree. We are looking that way. Judging by your conversation with Hannah, it seems like you're looking that way as well. I completely agree. And I think that's the way the society is going anyway. So I think the migration that will naturally happen. Having someone come into the business and you know, providing advice, I don't think will be a thing personally, because I think suppliers and people who you know, make these products will you know start going that way anyway, unless you are purchasing from you know China and but certainly and there's a couple of UK companies like where we bought our suppliers even that. You know, we procured mugs from in the past that they were 100% recyclable mugs.
Yeah.
So certainly the Western society is, you know, moving that way anyway, if you buy products British.
You know, well, certainly. I mean, that's, and it, you kind of have to do it in the best way for your company. So, you know, for me, the best way I can do it is to try and have everything made as much as I possibly can made in the UK. Try and get it made in the UK ideally from materials that come from the UK. So the way I choose to do it is by cutting down travel distance. So that it seems the most sensible way that I can do it for my business. And also, you know, it supports the country that we live in. Yes, we have a lot of US customers as well, but they appreciate the fact that something is made in the sort of country of origin, if you know what I mean. So we're having stuff made, and they like USA made stuff. They'd appreciate the fact that we're doing UK made stuff. But you have to find the best way of doing it and just be honest about why you're doing it. I'm doing it because I think in the future I won't have a choice. And yeah, it's probably a good idea. I'm not doing it because I wake up in the morning thinking I need to go and grab Greta Thunberg and go and fight people who are driving cars. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm with you. Yeah. I mean, you are your action, so...
Exactly. Yeah. But we should also be honest about that. You can't be perfect. And if you try and be perfect in anything, you'll come to pieces because it's impossible. It's impossible to have... to be aligned perfectly on absolutely everything. And people drive themselves nuts to do it. But you just... And to be honest, this is one thing that Han has taught me. I know she's going to listen to this. I'm trying to be nice to her. She has taught me that I would always beast her about she'd be doing one thing and I'd be like, yeah, but what about this? Just as a bit of banter. But she just does one thing and tries to solve that problem. And then she'll try and move on to the next one. She knows that she can't be this like religious zealot who has to be perfect in all aspects. It's doing what you can.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I think we've done well here. We've had a really interesting conversation.
Yeah, well, we'll soon find out when people actually listen to it, having fallen asleep. But I think we nailed a couple of points here, quite pertinent, and we don't like the little shits that put all the gash on our parks.
That's a fact. That is a fact. Well, have you got anything else to say? You must have something to plug, Nick.
We do actually. We've launched our drink, coffee, train, harder range. Mm-hmm. So this has been a long time in the running. So we started the ball rolling this, I think, May last year.
Yeah.
So it's been going nearly 12 months. And because of, you know, lockdowns, we're just trying to choose a right time to release a product. So as I'm sure you'll know, you're working on your jacket at the moment.
Yes.
There's a time of the year to release that, like, but certain products are seasonal. So something I'm having a discussion with Luke at the moment about releasing something that's not maybe suited for summer. But so the drink, coffee, train, harder range, we launched it to coincide with, you know, the world opening back up again. And it's essentially a sport range, a gym range. Mm-hmm. So we've got shorts, a set of like technical shorts of bombers. That would take a while to develop. We've got the T-shirt, a vest, which I said no, but Luke said yes.
It's because he's got arms, though. He's duty wiry bloke, isn't he?
Yeah, he's also not got obscure hairs on his upper back as well, which you know, for any people who are hairy on the stand, you just can't wear a vest. So we've got the vest and we've got the coffee. And this coffee is going to be our strongest coffee. So it's for our internal caffeine rating, it's 5 out of 5. So you think red on is a strong coffee for caffeine. This one is designed as a pre-workout. It's launched today. You know, they've got the video that's launched that's been posted on our social media. So that's our big thing at the moment. Yeah, yeah.
Who's the duty buff bloke in the pictures?
So there's a couple. So we've got
a dude from... Bloke.
Yeah, so there's a dude from Luke's local gym. His mate, a couple of them are mates, friends, people, you know, we had help with, yeah.
Because like coffee-wise, people don't know, do they, who aren't contact coffee converts. Caffeine, the amount of caffeine in a coffee doesn't necessarily equate to it being a strong coffee. Not the same thing.
No, this is... So you see these size of charts. You see them on, like Taylor's Coffee, for example. Yeah. Not Saga for Taylor's, but these you know charts that you know the 1 to 5, I think it usually is, or 1 to 6. But they relate to they can relate to, you know, how dark, how strong the actual coffee is. So I'll get a bit geeky on you now. That
Go.
The darker the coffee is, generally speaking, means that it's been roasted for longer. Mm-hmm. So if it's been roasted for longer, it means it's been burning off more caffeine in the roaster. So actually, it could potentially has potential to be less caffeinated. But what it does do is shrink the beans. So it takes more beans for it to be, say, 100 grams of coffee than it would if it's been roasted for a lot longer than it would if it's been, because the beans are bigger, beans are smaller even. So, yeah, essentially, the more you do to the coffee, the less caffeine it's going to have. So the 1 to 5 or 1 to 6, I think, mm-hmm. rating that they've got is, I don't know whether that's how dark the coffee is or how, you know, caffeinated it is, whereas Contact Coffee, our rating 1 to 5 is the strength of the caffeine in the coffee, and that's what we're about, high caffeine coffee.
Roger. Okay, there you go. That's good to know, man. Is that going to be available in the coffee club thing? Am I going to be allowed to have that in my box that I get every month?
At the moment, it's not, mate. This is a limited run, so it's only available with the Drink Coffee Train Harder range. So yeah, it's only be back for a short period, but we can square you away, guys.
Cheers, mate. I appreciate that. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah.
I was going to ask you this earlier, actually, mate, because I'm just trialing a new way of making coffee at the moment. What's your preferred option or way of making a coffee?
I've done a couple of things. I've done the whole what's it called? The glass thing you pour over. I've done that.
Oh yeah.
Like I do that occasionally when if I don't want to have milk, and because I do have milk. I have milk and honey in my coffee, which I know is sacrilege, but I can't drink it how I want. I do occasionally just do black, and if I do that, I'll use that pour over thing. But day to day, it's cafetiere because it's just, you know, I'm waiting what, like 4 minutes for it to brew, and then I'm good to go. Whereas the other one's a real process, and sometimes you want to process, but sometimes you just want to brew. So that's kind of what I do. Cafetiere would be the overarching norm for me.
There's a lot of beauty in the process. I agree with you. So the pour over, and I've made my coffee today with pour over. It's a lot smoother, isn't it?
Totally. It's fruity. My taste buds are shit. I don't have a sense of smell. So my taste buds are shit. So it's the only time that I can actually really taste the sort of coffee and the fruity aspect of the coffee bean is when I'm doing the pour over.
Agreed. Yeah, because I suppose unless you can really, really have unless you have really good taste buds, like an espresso, like the Italian way of making a coffee, you struggle to pick out the taste. You get quite the bitterness, you get different tastes. But the pour over, I think it really does bring out some of the notes of the coffee. And yeah. I completely agree with you, mate. So you're a cafetiere at the moment. I'm a pour over. I think Luke is absolutely religious on the AeroPress.
I've never used the AeroPress, man. I probably should have one of those, but I've never used it.
Yeah, he loves it. I was using a NanoPresso for a bit, which is another way of making espresso, portable espresso. But I feel like I've just been going off about Contact Coffee. What's Seniors Guild got coming up now?
Well, you've just left me hanging there. So what's the thing you've been trying? You said you've been trying a different way. Is it pour over?
Yeah, so it's a pour over, yeah. It's an American company called Espero. I'm just trying a bit of their kit at the moment. So what I like to do, I'm like the trialing dude for Contact Coffee. Currently trialing it. There's a lot of beauty in the process. The coffee is smooth. It's delicious.
It's like a glass thing. Like I would, if you put the filter in the top and just pour over, is that?
It's not. So I'm probably, Luke will probably slag me off later for, you know, dropping dits about our future products, but it's a metal one, so it can be used. You can travel with it, and it, you know, not get broken. So it's in line to, you know, with what we're going back to. You know, coffee on the go sort of thing. So yeah, it's a metal one. So just trying that at the moment, mate. It's brilliant, really nice.
Roger. That's cool, man. But for the future, like, because there are people who enjoy that process, and I know it's coffee on the go, and it's you still want the blokes to be able to make it in a fucking shithole in the shell scraping a brick and wood block. But
yeah,
personally, I would probably buy a glass one that had like a nice logo or something on it. I probably would. It'd be a bit more high end, maybe, but yeah, that's. I would probably buy that.
Yeah.
Singers Guild. Go on, mate.
Yeah, go on. What's got coming up then, mate?
Not a lot. You know, we're still. It's in some ways, it's going to be quite a boring year. Like until sort of autumn time, it's potentially going to be relatively boring. Because last year was meant to be the year where I sort of, I cut the product range down a bit and I focused on moving in the direction that we want to go. And then COVID fucked it. So I basically was ticked over last year. So all the things that should have been done by now aren't. So that's what's happening this year. So it's still the case that we've dropped the core products down to a minimum of designs and focusing on where we want to go. And because that's all in the background stuff, on the face of it, it just looks like we're just, you know, continuing to just sell the same stuff, which is kind of what we are. But it's got to happen. It's got to happen in order to be able to go where we need to go. So, yeah. There's a new T-shirt out yesterday that basically came as because of a fuck-up that I made. So we had the definition shirts. We're just doing different colour versions of them. We have like a navy, a dark navy, and a gold. And I, when I was restocking them, fucked up and got the wrong colour shirt. And the shirt that turned up is actually a lot brighter than the original navy. We'd run out of those navy anyway, so I've just swapped them. So they're all on the site now. And actually, to be honest, kind of prefer it. So
yeah.
As long as the customers are down with it, which so far they are, I'll probably keep the new colour because it's nice.
Is that the one you've got on there, Gaz?
It is. It's the one I've got on now.
I absolutely love the yellow punches out on the blue. I love like yellow or orange on the black yellow on the blue. It really, really punches out. I like it.
Yeah. Nice, so there's kind of that. And as soon as I can get some pictures of the jacket, it shouldn't be fucking long. As soon as I can get some pictures of the jacket and people can actually see it and start ripping it to bits, because it will need a ripping to bits process for a while in order that when it comes out, people are happy with it. And obviously, I'm not going to listen to every thing that everybody says.
Yes.
You know, there's an element, because it's a sample, there's an element of steering on there, and I'm happy to do that to an extent. So, yeah, as soon as I can do it. But yeah, day to day, tick it over, man. Just tick it over. I really want to do some shorts, but I don't know if I can pull it off yet. We might do. Yeah, I'm just trying to focus, man. I'm just trying to focus on the direction and not what is easy to do. I can just go, here's the design, bang it on a T-shirt, get it out, and it'll sell. I don't want to do that this year. I want to get to the end of this year knowing that we can go big into 2022. And yeah, it's kind of where we are.
Sweet. Are you, and you're still doing your lives on a Tuesday?
Yeah, I still do all that. Lives Tuesday nights, you come on and are mean to me. It's nice.
Yeah.
It's good.
So I've probably not told you about this really, have I? So when it's conveniently when Luke and I are both, it's a coincidence that we're both available, we'll jump on. And we'll be texting each other in the background whilst giving you abuse.
That's mean.
On that live. Yeah.
That's mean. It's just mean. But it's, I don't know. The lives have become, it's not really a branded thing. It's me that does it, but it's just, I rarely talk about the brand on there. It's more the community aspect of it. And it's the customers coming on and just having a chat. I'm like, we just talk about anything. So it's if you're tuning into it, expecting to hear about, you know, the latest product range or anything like that, you're just not going to. Like, what were we talking about the other day? Bigfoot and fucking aliens. It's mental. But there's a fun aspect to it. And I realize that I do tend to be the butt of jokes on there. But that's fine. I've had my ego is absolutely fine. Cool. Okay. Well, looking at the WhatsApp group, I think there's lots of things on the WhatsApp group that we need to get in there and start putting some input in.
Yeah, I think there is, mate. Interesting. Okay.
Well, good conversation. It's good, genuinely good to have you on. And when you ring me when you're driving, I do enjoy that. I know sometimes I'm I've got dogs there and I can't talk to you, or I'm just generally too busy for you because I'm a big dick player. But I enjoy the fact that you ring me and we have little catch-ups.
That's no, good, mate. Good to download on each other.
Roger. Cheers, man. I'll see you.
Cheers, mate. Right.
Bye-bye.